expect to seem to keep the pace of releasing an album each 2-3 years? Is that now the natural rhythm for the band, creatively speaking, and then recording, tour, and rest and everything?
I think now, like I said, if we call it the recipe that we have, now if, for example, after Built to Last, we think that no, we need another year or we need 6 months, it's not going to be, you know, a problem to decide that, because that was a little bit, you know, that was a little bit of the reason why we ended up having a break, because everything was like, okay, tour, 6 months, new album, tour, in a 2 years period, and now it's like, let's see, you know, if it feels good, and everything, it comes from our heart anyway. And Joakim and I was talking earlier on, and we said, like, still it's like the hunger of like starting to play live now when doing the promo, it's like, now we want to start play live.
I have the cliche, it might be wrong, that before each album the band kind of regroup and talk together to brainstorm what they want for the next album. Does it work like that? And if it doesn't work like that, how does it work for Hammerfall?
For Hammerfall, actually, we never discuss any plans like, okay, next album is going to be called Revolution. We have to write songs about that. That's not...
And it will be trashier or more melodic or more whatever.
No, the whole... As it is, normally Joakim and Oscar writes mostly of the songs. And I was part of Infected and I was part of Revolution. Sadly, my father passed away early this year during the writing period, so I couldn't be a part of it. But normally it's like we start to write songs and Oscar sends stuff to Joakim and it pops up in my Dropbox, and you know, I listen to stuff, and normally it's like, that's good. Or if something comes up that's not good, I don't even answer, because I don't need to say to him, that sucks, we don't need that. So, and then it evolves in naturally. Somehow we don't discuss a theme, or a lot of bands discuss a theme. Now it's going to be robotic, it's going to be futuristic, whatever. It's never been like that.
So you let the songs talk.
Yeah, the music talk. Sort of, you know, some riffs comes up, and then of course we talk on the phone, and when we rehearse a little bit, we go out and have a beer, and then ideas pops up. But then when Joakim starts to write lyrics, it normally comes some ideas. Oscar has, I have some, like, theme, and how do you say, like the chorus melody or the theme of the song, and then everything just molds together, and then we have the concept. So, and now, like, for example, now we're thinking of how is the next stage production going to look like. It's not like brainstorming, oh, we're going to have pyro, we're going to have that, we're going to have dragons flying around. It's like, we just, how it's going to be. And I know it's like, it's going to just evolve into something that's going to be great.
In terms of lyrics, it's Joakim which is in charge, or...?
Yeah, Joakim writes the lyrics, but normally when it comes to the songs, for example, on the Revolution album, when I was writing, me and Joakim wrote 3 songs, and then I wrote one together with Oscar and Joakim. That was fun, because I just, you know, I've sent you an MP3, can you listen to it, you know, have a look, because... And it sounds cool. Yeah, I was thinking a little, but maybe in that direction. And day after, it comes up, boom. And then he has a title for the song, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, but he transformed it, because I'm not a lyric writer at all. I've tried many times, but in that case, we would still be playing youth clubs.
We mentioned it. So 10th anniversary for 10th album, sorry. Mm-hmm. One way or the other, was it an extra pressure when you were writing or recording? Yeah. Saying, that's the 10th, like a milestone for the band?
I think I know Oscar said that he was a little bit stressed, and I think that was a lot because of, you know, he wanted me as a partner to bounce ideas and stuff, but then it happened when my father passed away, so I just said,
I don't have any stress. I need just to be away from this and take care of my family. So of course he got stressed, because he was thinking I could write a couple of songs at least. But now it is as it is, and he made a fucking amazing job. You know, he was like, he said, okay, I'm doing 24/7 now, I need to write songs. And he did a really great job.
In terms of the recording session for Built to Last, was it anything different from the past? Well, it's still Fredrik Nordström, and so anything different this time?
I think we found out that, like I said, on the Infected, when I started to be a part of the production, technical production, we moved that into the Revolution, and then we were discussing maybe we should involve Fredrik a little bit more to oversee the production. And everyone said, yeah, but everything went so well last time. And I said, but it's good anyway if he can come in a little bit more often, but maybe during the recording. He recorded the drums, because he's one of the best, I have to say, when it comes to record drums. He recorded the drums with us. That's very fast. And then we set up the amps and everything. He was miking, and we tried out all the guitar sounds and found the right things. And me and Fredrik was bouncing off so many ideas when it came to guitar cabinets. And in the end, now it sounds good. And then he left, and we started to record. And then he came in every third day or something, just over, like, hold on, I go in and have a look there, and then he went off again. So, and that recipe we found now is, we have so much fun during the recordings. It's amazing. And then of course Joachim goes away with James Michael from 6 a.m. and that's also a big thing, because
it's important to have someone focusing on the vocal.
Yes, I have to say, before we were working on the No Sacrifice No Victory, it was Charlie Bauerfein. And he's not a singer, he's a sound designer slash very good engineer, and of course a producer. But he didn't understand, you know, he could wore out. He wore out Joachim in like 2 days, and he started sound like this. And Joachim didn't like that. So when Infected that also James Michael mixed, he said, I want to try this. And I have to say, the performance, vocal performances then with James is amazing, and he's relaxed, and Joachim's range and everything is like explode. So because it's calm, it's relaxed and everything, and we have the same. So even if Joachim, he's a part of when we record the guitars and everything, but we found the recipe that works. So it's like efficient, even if it costs a lot of money. It does. It's not for free to go to LA for 2.5 weeks recording the vocals with hotels and everything.
Yeah, sure.
But we want to invest that
with it.
Yeah, and that is the best investment we've done ever. And for the fans, it's like, this is how we sound.
Okay. So David Warning is playing drums on the record?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Do you plan to hire a permanent drummer, anyone? Him or not?
Yeah,
is it with pain?
But we were discussing it earlier today, me and Joachim, and we said David is he's in the band, but he's a prospect, like a motorcycle club at the moment, and that's on equal terms, because he's been playing with Pain for a long time, and he's in between stuff, and he said he wanted to do it this way, and we wanted to do it, so we have a trial period, and all of us, it's perfect, we're happy, and that was the best, the Revolution tour with David, wow, amazing.
Okay, good. So as you mentioned it, you also, apart from Amaphone, you like to produce, engineer, mix for the bands, House of Shakira, for example.
Yes. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. But for your own record and
so on.
Do you kind of find another kind of satisfaction working in front of the board and not in a recording room.
I have to say,
how different is the fun or the
nothing,
the pleasure?
For me, it's exactly the same. And it's the live when I've been working with King Diamond, for example. All good friends. I know everyone in the band. And the thing is, every time I do sound, for example, live sound, the band sees me as the whatever extra member in the band, and that's how I feel. Also, it doesn't matter because that's an art form. That's an art form that's totally different from.
Yes. Yeah. My pleasure.
But it's the same. It's a performance for me, I have to say.
But do you think that, as you mentioned, the other musician consider you as an extra member of the band?
Yes.
But is that the case because you're yourself a musician and you prove in different bands that you can manage? And would they behave the same if it was someone not especially a musician but just a full-time producer?
I think because I'm a musician, it makes it more easy. Much more easier, and it was the same when I worked with, you know, Twisted Sister, Glenn Hughes, Rat, Dokken, Frank Marino, Alice Cooper.
Very different kind of artist.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's been everything. Meshuggah, Candlemass. I work with so many bands as a sound engineer, and it's good friends because a lot of musicians are based in Sweden and everything. And that's somehow, of course, the problem is I'm a musician myself, so I'm going to disappear on tours, so I can't be a part of like a long tour, for example. I was just lucky that I could do the whole reunion tour with King Diamond. I've been a part of it since day one, but that next summer they're going to tour a little bit, I heard, but it's going to be impossible for me because I'm doing Hammerfall.
But sometimes it's not like frustration that you're on your side of the board and you say you would yourself take the guitar and do it your way or different.
No.
You can to put your own identity in the back and lead the artist thought.
Yeah, but that's a little bit like being a producer in recording an album in a studio. Because the thing is, the easy way out, like you say, the ghost musician way out is to. If the production is, and the guitar player is quite crappy, and it's like, let him play, and then when he leaves, you replay everything. That's the old school thing, and I think that worked for a while, but I think the identity of making musicians come through, and I've been working with so many bands that, you know, I was like, it's not the best band, no name mentioned, but then you go out on a tour and they sell out every fucking night and people are crazy. Then it's like,
you missed something? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Then I had to start rethink. And first time I went out with the, what was the last one that I was like, Opeth. I was out with Opeth for a long time. And that was the growl period, five, six. And I wasn't into growl, and I wasn't into the speed and thing. But the thing is, when I started to tour, in the beginning it was not noise, but I was like, okay, yeah. But then I had to rethink, because it's like 5,000 people here every night. And they, you know, we supported Dream Theater, and then after that we did our own tour. And I was like, they're selling out everywhere. So I had to rethink. And there are phenomenal musicians, but that's the thing somehow I had to relate to all the time, and I love it because I learn a lot.
And what, as a producer, what's your opinion about new tools, new technology, auto-tune stuff?
Love it.
But is that a blessing or a curse? I mean, from some point of view, you would say that kind of stuff, you can make someone very, very bad sound good. After that, obviously, on stage, that would be the final cut to say if you're good or okay.
But I would say I can't make an artist. I can't post-edit feeling. the performance. And the thing is, in the studio, if the drummer is a bad player, I can't make him sound good. It's impossible. Even if I can do every
cut and paste,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because how he plays it, and the same with guitar, same with vocals. But if he can make a performance, and maybe one note is a little bit ooh, then I can help him. And that's not, because if we redo it 10 times, it's going to sound bad, because then he's going to lose the strength, the power. And I think all the technical tools with the plugins and everything that is called in the computer, it's for me it's a blessing. But then you have to just find the right word. You have to have control over how to work them. Because a lot of people say they can save everything. It's no problem. Just whatever.
So what you say, you cannot turn lead into gold.
No.
If it's crap, it remains crap.
Yeah.
Okay. We have the feeling
from our side that
even the worst stuff can be tweaked, recut and pasted and make it difficult.
Like we say, in rough translation, I think it's American. Shit in, shit out.
All right.
Yeah.
I would like to finish our interview with the short questions, just a stupid question. Or least favorite song from Hammerfall.
Favorite song?
Least favorite.
Yeah, ooh.
The one never played, no big deal.
Oh, never played. Oh, that's a hard one.
Favorite is too easy. Or not, but.
I can't answer that.
Or the one you might be fed up to play. You
know? No, fed up to play.
Let the hammer fall, whatever, I don't
know. No, when I see the audience, I just love, you know, seeing the reaction. That's why.
Okay. A song you would have loved to be able to compose. So let's say one of your favorite songs, I suppose.
Oh.
Not from the band, not from everybody.
Yeah. Oh, that I would have written, sort of.
The song that you heard and you said, wow, you were stuck to saying...
I have to say Pinball Wizard from The Who.
Imagine for the next record, of Hammerfall, you have the choice of any guest, dead or alive. Who would it be?
Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Ronnie James Dio.
All right. Is there a place in the world that you would crave to give a gig there, to play there? Or you already... You can't cover a lot of the world.
I think Reykjavik, Greenland.
All right.
Yeah, that would be cool. I know they had a venue there back in the day. And it's not many. I talked to a friend of mine that worked with the promoter and said it's very hard to get artists there. And I know because I worked with Europe for a long time, Swedish band.
Mm-hmm.
They went there.
All right.
And, but that place is not around anymore. So right. They have a hard time getting. Yeah, that would be cool.
And the last thing, as a child or a teenager, I don't know, what was the spark that make you take your guitar and wanted to be a professional guitar player? Is there a spark? As a lot of Swedish musicians explained to me, the advantage of your system is that very early, the young age, you have access to a lot of music.
From you were like 9-10 years old.
So obviously that's why I said, because my question was,
communal
school.
Because it was a music school, but the spark.
Because my question was at the time, how it seemed that when you go in Sweden, you can stop any guy in the street and you play like Yngwie Malmsteen, you know what I mean? And so he explained to me, kind of also the school system saying each Swedish guy will have one way or the other access to music, make it or not, but will have access to it.
I have to say, for me, it was the folk music. Folk tradition comes up from north, where Joakim's from actually. It's called Dalarna.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, the violins and everything, and we have some.
Like guitar.
Yeah, it's like guitar. And ABBA guys, Björn and Benny,
yeah,
they picked all the melodies from the folk tradition music. And I say that's why the spark for me was like the first time we went to this out in the woods in nowhere. It was so much mosquitoes and stuff. And my father, he was an opera singer and he played guitar. He said, we have to go there. And me and my brother, he's a musician also. I don't want to go there because it's so much mosquitoes. And but we went out there and came in. And it was about 1,000 violin and, you know, mostly violin players. And they were standing in small groups and they were just playing. And I heard all these melodies. And I just started to play trumpet. I was 9, I think. And I came home and I heard some melodies and I started to play it. And I just, that was the spark of melodies. And I say, I kept, and you can hear it. You can hear it since I joined the band. I brought in, of course, I'm influenced. I worked with In the Malmsteen for 5.5 years as a sound man. And we've been friends since early 80s. But I brought in the folk traditional melodies into Hammerfall, and that's what Oscar loved. That's why I joined the band, because they love the melodies. And I have to say, that's the spark, of course.
And the switch to metal? So, okay, you're a musician, you're training in guitar.
I was playing trumpet, but then my brother is...
Trumpet to metal?
Yeah. No, my brother is 4 years older, and he was a drummer all the time in jazz, but he started to play pop music and stuff. Pop and rock and hard rock back in the 70s. And then he played me live in Japan with Deep Purple, and I heard Richard Blackmore, and I heard a howling guitar, and I was like... That's cool, and I didn't understand how to. And the only thing we had at home was an acoustic guitar, so it was like,
yeah, difficult to
smoke on the water came. And that was
thank you very much.
My pleasure.